Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. President Biden temporarily orders more troops to the U.S.-Mexico border to supplement the 2,500-member National Guard force already there. This as Title 42 restrictions on migrant entries expire next week. CBS's Stephen Portnoy.
Officials say these 1,500 troops will not be interacting with detained migrants, but rather offering support to the Border Patrol, transportation, helping with administrative duties at processing centers, and White House aide says the troops may also assist with drug detection. The administration notes it's the same number of troops who were working along the border when President Biden took office. It's roughly a quarter of the number first deployed by former President Trump in 2018.
For the first time in 15 years, film and TV writers are walking the picket line.
When do we want it?
Now!
Writers Guild of America members want, among other things, more pay. Retired writer Judy Tate says she's picketing to support young people.
Growing up in a completely different world, completely different economy, they are trying to be forced into a gig economy, and they can't pay their fundamental bills.
The late-night talk shows will be in reruns tonight. Scripted series and films will take longer to be affected. The death toll has climbed after yesterday's chain reaction crash during a dust storm on I-55 in south-central Illinois. Police say what was previously thought to be the remains of one individual was two. Seven people have died and 37 were injured near Farmersville. Illinois State Police Director Brendan Kelly.
So this area is a very flat roadway that is surrounded by dirt farm fields, and there's very little windbreaks in that area.
There's been a widespread takedown of internet drug dealers, CBS's Jim Crisula reports.
It was called Operation Spector, the largest international crackdown on the dark web marketplace for the sale and purchase of fentanyl and other illegal drugs. Attorney General Merrick Garland.
In the United States, we arrested 153 defendants, seized 104 illegal guns, and seized over 200,000 pills, including those containing fentanyl.
Nearly 300 people, most of them in the U.S., were arrested as part of the international illicit drug crackdown. Jim Crisula, CBS News.
There's less than a month to go before a possible U.S. default if both parties don't end their standoff over the $31.4 trillion debt ceiling. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer is blaming House Speaker Kevin McCarthy for caving into the extremists in his party.
The American people haven't even had the ability to look at what's in this awful bill, and I think they deserve to see it.
President Biden has invited congressional leaders to the White House next week. U.S. job openings dipped to 9.6 million, the lowest since 2021. This is CBS News.
Find your next great hire with Indeed. Their hiring platform makes it easy to attract, interview, and hire candidates all in the same place. Visit Indeed.com/...
The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM. Wisconsin's home for rational talk radio.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. Republican state lawmakers start reworking Governor Evers' budget proposal today. The Budget Writing Joint Finance Committee plans to finish Wisconsin's new two-year state budget in a few weeks. Republicans are expected to cut most of the governor's $104 billion proposal he put on the table in February. More people in Wisconsin could get into state parks for free. A committee of the state Senate is holding hearings today on plans to offer free admission to certain fourth graders, anyone with an Every Kid Outdoors pass, and to everyone in Wisconsin on Earth Day. The state already offers a free fun weekend that lets everyone in Wisconsin into state parks for free on the first weekend in June. In sports, the Brewers are at Colorado tonight. Freddie Peralta starts for Milwaukee. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Direct from the Dairy State, it's Extra Sharp Weekends, a three-hour block of Wisconsin-produced radio, Saturdays and Sundays from 11 a.m. till 2 p.m., featuring Raised in Wisco with Joel Clayfish and Danielle Fairman, The Cripes Cast with Charlie Behrens, and Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown. Enjoy it by the slice or enjoy the whole darn block. Extra Sharp Weekends is radio so fresh, it squeaks. Listen in on the Civic Media Station or on the app.
When they're investigating, we can't stop watching. This month on BritBox, sit back,
relax, and enjoy watching The Detectives. Discover Britain's most bingeable mysteries, including the brand new season of Grace, the hit series based on the books by best-selling author Peter James. Unwind with The Detectives you could watch all night long. Stream them all now exclusively on BritBox. Endlessly intriguing. Start your free trial at BritBox.com.
Monday morning at 8, don't miss Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring legendary Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Football, life, and fun.
Earl, you've been driving a Yugo. They just gave you a brand new Ferrari with turbo boost. So enjoy it, brother.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Monday morning at 8 on The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM WAUK.
A progressive voice for rural Wisconsin. WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at WAUKradio.com. The Shaw 101 FM. Franklin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at WAUK Radio.
Miss a minute.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. President Biden, interesting tweet today. Tweeted out, "Let me be clear. America is not a deadbeat nation." The fact that we've got to say that speaks volumes of the moment that we're in. He goes on to say, "We invest in small business, veterans, health care, food assistance, and more. And then we pay our bills." That's the message of the moment. Honestly, truthfully, it doesn't get any simpler than that. We want things. We need things. We've made promises. We pay our bills. Now, look, that's a huge difference from the last guy who, you know, filed bankruptcy multiple times, had a history of stiffing people out of wages and of contracts. So I get it. I get it. You know, the party that used to be the party of big business, they know you don't really have to pay the bills. You can run up debt and let somebody else, you know, like the workers and the pensioners, cover it. We're now, I got to tell you, I'm thrilled the way Biden's handling this so far. You don't negotiate with terrorists. We used to say this all the time. And basically what the Republicans are doing right now is saying, you know, we're going to hold the country hostage. And we've got a whole faction, a pretty sizable faction over here that wants to shoot the hostages. So, hey, this is how McCarthy's probably going to play this. Hey, look, you know, I'm with you. Yeah. I want to help you, Joe. But, you know, I got these crazy people over. You know, they're just itching at the trigger, man. They do. They want to take out the hostage, which means you and me. And this is one of those things where you go, you know, the president did reach a hand out and say, okay, Speaker, come. We'll have a sit down. McCarthy accepted, as he has to do. And there'll be a shindig. Now, what I find interesting is Mitch McConnell, the Senate minority leader, is saying, I'm going to show up, but there's nothing for me to do here. I'm just going to show up, pay attention, you know, maybe nod off in the middle when it gets boring, but there's nothing for the Senate to do in this. This is the Republicans in the House saying, we're going to hold you hostage. And look, you know, the Biden administration wants to spend the money that was allocated in the legislation that was passed at the beginning of his term. You pass a bill, you debate it, you spend the money, and they want to get that out the door because the view is the vision. This is where vision matters. The vision is we have an infrastructure that's in desperate need of investment. The American Society of Civil Engineers puts our need at somewhere, at this point, I would fathom about $5 trillion. So the $1.2 trillion, it's a start. But it's not gonna fix everything. They want to get that out the door. They want to get that moving because, well, we need infrastructure. And we need to be moving on the climate front as well. We need to be investing in new technologies. We got a lot of stuff to do. And more importantly, we're going to create jobs for Americans. And this is where, again, I come back to Biden's call for the Buy American provision, which I am 100% behind. That's going to mean stability for the future. We're going to reshore manufacturing. We're going to make stuff here again, which means all those communities we went to back in October and into early November, those places that used to be will now be places where the center of the community is that manufacturing prowess, is that identity of creating the solar panels of the future, the batteries of the future. And there are, look, hundreds of sites across this country that are popping up all over the place because of the investment that Biden's making. And Republicans are saying, no, head in the sand, stop. No, can't do that. Biden spent us into this. It's all Biden's fault. It's all Joe Biden's fault. And look, I'm of the mindset where, and I'm hoping this is where Biden's thinking is. I'm hoping he's of the mindset, look, we allocated the money. You've already spent it. It's already on the books. It's already going out the door. You can't at the 11th hour go, oh, sorry, psych. You can't loosey the country. You just can't do it. And there's my sense of Biden just saying, if you want to talk about future spending, if you want to talk about how we can, help Congress do their freaking job and actually pass a budget like they're supposed to with 13 different appropriations and all of the stuff that goes into that, the actual hard work. It's easy to go on the F channel or on the podcast circuit and scream about, Joe Biden's spending's out of control, when you, Congress, are the purse. You are the one. You're the one with the money in the role in the purse. You've already allocated this. You've spent it. You can't then have buyer's remorse and go, we changed our mind. So my thought is, Biden say, look, I'm happy to work on future, help you do your job. Happy to do that. But this is done. You're gonna extend this because you knew what was coming. And you do this on purpose. You're being childish. And I hope Biden plays the adult in this. I'm hoping he comes out and says, it is what it is. And you're causing more chaos. And going to the American people and going, look, the reality is we pay our bills. And this is what I think he's doing by this tweet, going, look, hey, we're not a deadbeat country. We're not trying to stiff anybody. And the thing that bothers me and why this debt ceiling thing has to completely go is we're just not, Congress is broken. They have been broken for a very long time. The last time I remember an actual budget being passed the way it's supposed to, I was a whole lot younger. Some of the stories I saw, 97 was the last year that it was all 13 appropriation bills, everything signed, everything done. Now we do these continuing resolutions and all of these gimmicks to further pay our bills. And here we are again in this moment. We're going to have another government shutdown. We're going to have more uncertainty. And you wonder why the rest of the world looks at us and goes, it's time to move along. Now, what I find interesting is there's some talk of, using the 14th Amendment. That government is required by the 14th Amendment to continue to pay its bills. to pay bondholders, to pay Social Security, to pay government employees. You can't force people to come to work and not pay them. So there's a way to say, look, we're just not going to do it. Now what we know will happen then is there will be a lawsuits and all kinds of stuff, and you end up before the Supreme Court, which then makes me go, this is a corporate Supreme Court before it's all of the other things, before it's an ideological culture war court. It is a corporate court. And when the Chamber of Commerce throws an amicus brief in, they usually win. They're on the winning side of the cases, almost three quarters of the cases. The court gives them quite a lot of deference, gives them quite a lot of power. So the Chamber of Commerce cannot be thrilled with the economy coming screeching to a halt and crashing down because, hey, things are good. I don't know if you've been watching the earnings calls. Wow, things are good. They don't want to screw that up. They don't want to booger that up. They know things are good. They want to keep lining their pockets. And I got to wonder, which way does the Supreme Court come on this? Which way does this work out for them? I got to think they're going to go with the chamber and not crash the economy. And this is something that I think Republicans are going to have to think about. Because their secret weapon, the court, might not be on their side when you're talking about harming the pocketbooks of the big donors. Because, hey, Harlan Crow, you know, he might not be able to afford those $500,000 vacations for Clarence Thomas if something bad happens to the economy. Might not be able to buy Mama's house again. So this could be interesting. And now here's the thing, and I know, I get it. Everyone says, well, all this inflation, it's Joe Biden's fault. You know, we got to rein in this spending because all this wasteful Biden spending is Bidenflation. You've heard the idiots, you know, blather this out. When the reality is it's exactly what we've been saying for, well, from the beginning, from the very beginning. It's what we've been saying is, it's great, good old fashioned American greed. And there was one of those moments today where the good folks over at the newspaper of the investor class, the Wall Street Journal. Headline of the day. Why is inflation so sticky? It could be corporate profits. And it was one of those things. It was one of those moments where you go, oh my God, fire's hot, water's wet, ice is cold, the sky is blue. Who knew? Mind blowing. Who knew that this could be it? That you know, corporate greed could be the reason. And they go in, they talk about, you know, gee, it's a rare opportunity for businesses to boost their bottom line, to boost their profits, and they're taking it. And it's one of those moments as you're reading through this article where they're it's all this other stuff. It's the pandemic, it's Russia, it's the raw materials bottleneck, it's all this stuff. And then they get to it and they go, well, reality is yeah, it's some of those things. But there are signs. There are signs that businesses are doing more than just covering their costs. Really, there are signs. Well, which signs would that be? Would it be all of the earnings calls that we've been talking about for the last year plus, where they're bragging about how their profit margins are, oh my gosh, record levels, and they've never been so happy? Could it be that? Huh, I wonder. And then they go in and ask the question, well, why do consumers do it? You know, why are consumers paying for it? You mean like paying for rent? When the rents are going through the roof everywhere? You mean, you know, paying, you know, $6 for a dozen eggs when there are no alternatives available and you have monopolization across industries where everyone, where there are multiple companies in the same industry are raising the same prices, you know, manufacturers suggested retail prices or manufacturers suggested gouging prices. And they act like in the newspaper of the investor class that this is a shock that, you know, I read in the textbook that, you know, there's going to be competition and, you know, one was going to want to get more market shares so they're going to lower prices. And you go, no, that's not happening. And why is it that consumers are paying it? Because they don't really have a choice. They don't really have a choice. But, you know, at least in this article, on some little bit of a way, you know, they're saying it's collusion. It's monopolization. It's corporate greed. They're trying. They're give the Wall Street Journal credit in this moment that they're trying to say that their readers, the investor class, are responsible for this. It's not Joe Biden. It's greedflation. And I don't know that it gets any simpler than this. Why are consumers paying the prices? Again, that free market argument you learned about in Econ 101. A free market is only free when you can abstain from participating. We don't have a free market on housing or food or healthcare or any of those things. And corporate America knows it. And they know they got us by the short hairs. They got us by the stones, man. And that's why, again, I look at our Republican friends. I know who to blame in this. And it's not Joe Biden. It's not Biden wanting to invest in the future. It's not. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Quick break. Right back.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I got an email from Roger listening to us on WCPT AM 820 in Chicago. And Roger has a question. He goes, I heard your interview with the lawyer. I had to guess who the lawyer is, and I'm assuming this is Monday night with Renato Mariotti. He asked, do you know anything about the Loper case at all? Anything? He says they make doing business so hard to save a spotted fly. We have to rein in the federal government. Bureaucrats are destroying our freedom. He misused the word "our" instead of "our." It's time we take back control. Now, what he's talking about is this Loper case that some fear are going to overturn the Chevron deference that says that, you know, federal agencies, you know, manage their business where there's expertise involved that Congress leaves vague. And there's a whole bunch of stuff that goes into this, but it's basically it comes down to federal oversight and having a cop on the beat. And I come back to this moment of saying, look, you know, I know when there's no cop on the highway, everyone's doing 100 miles an hour. And I see that in the same way in corporate America. If there's not a cop on the beat, if there's not someone that they have to be concerned about, they're going to abuse it. Because this is how we got to the place where we are. Tons of abuses. Now, I subscribe to the Department of Labor's emails every day, and they send me tons of stuff that are going on that the DOL is looking into and investigations that they're doing. And a couple of them caught my attention. And it's these things go, you know, these are the reasons we have inspectors and oversight and a process to protect working people. One of them, you know, in my backyard here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, one of the Popeye's chicken and biscuits. Evidently, this guy owns a couple of them. As I understand, this owner of this company was really not happy that an inspector came in from the wage of hour division of the Department of Labor, and, you know, made it very clear, slamming doors, intimidating people, using vulgarity, and as they said, made it quite clear to those workers that they better not talk to the inspector. They better not participate in this investigation. And it's this kind of, in the workplace, this master-servant power that those workers are more afraid of the boss, because he can make their lives miserable, than the inspector, who could make it a little bit better. And this guy, in, you know, right out, you know, made no bones about it, wanted no part of this inspection, you know, was cursing loudly at the investigator, acting aggressively as they reported, and, you know, basically being a presence there to intimidate the workforce. And now there's a, you know, there's an investigation going on to this, and there will be penalties down the road. But it got me thinking that if you don't have these wage and hour division people going in and doing these inspections, and I'm waiting for the next one to come that he was cheating people, which is why he was so upset. It got me thinking about all the people who are getting screwed over. And as I'm thinking about this, another email pops up into my box from the Department of Labor that points out that in Louisville, Kentucky, evidently three McDonald's franchisees we're going to have to pay something like $212,000 in fines after the federal investigators went through their payrolls and went through their their workforce and came up with 305 minors who had worked illegally. Now, most of it was wage and hour stuff. Most of it was hour stuff. You know, kids working, you know, more hours than they're supposed to under the legal limit. Kids, working off the clock. There were all kinds of stuff. And the part that got my attention and what grabbed me is 305 kids were working illegally, including two 10-year-olds. I didn't stutter. Two 10-year-olds working at the McDonald's. And, you know, they're saying that these two 10-year-olds were working up to 2 a.m. And you go, hold on, wait a second. How is this possible? How is it possible that we've got, you know, literally 10-year-olds working the fryers and all of this? How is that? Now, again, I step back and I go, and remember, you know, our friends in Iowa and a number of other states that are changing child labor laws. You know, McDonald's needs cheap labor because they don't want to pay a decent wage to attract people. So what are they going to do? We got to open it up for kids. And we got to put kids in these jobs. And they found a number of cases where you had kids under 16 years old operating fryers and other dangerous machinery. And you go, why is it 16? Because that's kind of the age where you understand consequences and reality. And look, I'm not against kids working. I want kids to work. I worked as a kid. But do we want to return to the days where that's not just, hey, I'm going to save up for a car or save up for, you know, the date on Saturday night or maybe save for college? Instead of making that in, hey, the family needs the money. We're going to put you back to work. Screw school. And I'm looking at this and I'm going, you know, without regulatory oversight, without the kind of ability of these agencies to be the cop on the beat, what kind of abuses will come? 10-year-olds working at the McDonald's. I'm waiting for the legislation to come to make that okay. And look, this isn't new. They've wanted to do this for a while. They're trying to recreate this country in the form it was in the 19th century. I've said 1,000 times that there's a push going on in conservative circles to repeal the 20th century, to move us back to the days of desperation and poverty wage jobs and families having to work at the company store to make ends meet. They are actively working to move us back in that direction. They're actively pushing to move us into that kind of desperation. And we're going after the kids right now. Now, we're just doing it around the edges, making they can work longer if they want to with parental control. I remember stories. In fact, we were up in Scranton for the coal mine tour of families choosing to send their 5 and 6-year-olds down into the mines, knowing that those 5 and 6-year-olds had the chance of half of them not coming back. They had a 50% fatality rate at that age. The older they got, the better chance they made that they would survive. But what kind of parent chooses, mind you, to send their child into those conditions? Well, no one would do that today, Rick. And do you know why? Because the laws won't allow it. That is until our Republican friends change it. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Quick break, right back after that.
Bringing some sanity to the airwaves. The Shaw 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
CBS News Brief. The Biden administration is sending 1,500 additional active duty troops to the southern border to offer support amid an expected increase in migrants as Title 42 restrictions soon expire. CBS's Weijia Zhang adds,
the White House says judges and lawyers are heading to the border to handle expedited removal proceedings, and those who do not qualify for asylum will be removed quickly in a matter of days or weeks.
11,000 Writers Guild of America members have walked off the job. CBS's Nichelle Medina in L.A.
The last writer's strike in 2007 lasted 100 days. Hollywood lost $2 billion, and that's when the rise of reality TV began.
Nearly 300 people have been arrested in an international crackdown on the dark web marketplace for illegal drugs. Attorney General Merrick Garland.
In the United States, we arrested 153 defendants, seized 104 illegal guns, and seized over 200,000 pills, including those containing fentanyl.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk. From Muskego to Pewaukee, always streaming at WAUKradio.com.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matnair. Here's what you need to know. Highway 35 between DeSoto and Ferryville remains closed after the freight train derailment last week. Two BNSF engines and 10 railroad cars derailed Thursday, with two of the cars ending up in the flooded Mississippi River. Closing the highway allows crews and equipment access to the derailment site to start cleanup. The cars contain paint, oxygen, and lithium-ion batteries. A containment boom has been placed as a precaution to collect diesel fuel and other hazardous materials from the river. There is no word yet on when the highway will reopen. 17 years in prison for a former Wisconsin high school student. Now 20-year-old Grant Furman was convicted earlier this year of attacking his high school's police officer in 2019 at Oshkosh West. Furman had been facing 60 years for stabbing the school's resource officer in the neck with a barbecue fork. I'm Jane Matnair. This is Civic Media News.
Hey everybody, how we doing? I'm Charlie Behrens, inviting you to join me Saturdays and or Sundays at noon. It's a horse apiece, whatever you decide. We're doing the Cripescast, where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest, and it's more fun than a six-pack of Jolly Good. Okay, the pride of Random Lake, that Jolly Good is. Anyway, it's on your Civic Media station and the Civic Media app. And do me a favor, yeah, tell your folks I says hi. Okay, real good.
Have fun on the lake this summer. Treat yourself and find the watercraft you want at Action Boathouse Showroom just south of 59 on 164 in Waukesha. Check out the fun and versatile Sea-Doo Switch with its powerful Rotex jet engine. Action Boathouse Showroom also has a selection of luxury fishing boats or pontoon boats from seven top USA manufacturers. The team at Action Boathouse Showroom is excited to help you launch into the sun this season and onto the lake. Action Boathouse Showroom, just north of 59 on 164 in Waukesha.
High pay with excellent benefits? Check. Fair treatment and safe work conditions? Check. A paid training program? Check. Check all of your career boxes with the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades of District Council 7. Experienced industrial painters and drywall finishers needed now or become an apprentice. Call Tom Coyne at 262-488-4839 today. 262-488-4839 or go to IUPATDC7.com.
Life had a remote control. You could pause or rewind. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. Take the one-minute risk test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
Or at supportdemocracy.org.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So NBC News is reporting that the headline, U.S. ready for high-level talks with China. Evidently, the U.S. ambassador, Nicholas Burns, said that, things are complicated, competitive, but, you know, Washington doesn't want a conflict with Beijing. We believe more dialogue would be constructive. We'd like to talk. I've never been against talking. It's the actions that I want to see. And, you know, rebuilding manufacturing here, shoring up our supply chains, that to me is better than the talking. But here to share some thoughts on, well, what the talking may be and what we should be doing instead of talking, I've asked our good friend Scott Paul to come share some thoughts. Scott is the president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing, AmericanManufacturing.org, the website. Scott, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick, it's good to be with you tonight.
So what do you make of this? What do you make of, you know, we want to talk. I didn't know there was a point at which we weren't talking or didn't want to talk. Is this a new declaration? What is this?
Well, it's a good question, and you will recall, because this seems like a thousand news cycles ago, the spy balloon, right? And just before that, it was announced that Secretary of State Blinken was going to go over and initiate talks. And, of course, that didn't happen, and things got put on pause. And in the meantime, there's just been kind of a ratcheting up of aggressive actions, I would say, on the part of Beijing. And clearly the sentiment in Congress is not to want to move a step closer to China here. And so I will say, if there is something good that can come out of dialogue, I'm all for it, right? I am
absolutely
all for it. But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't do other things. And the other things include shoring up our own manufacturing base to make sure that we're not finding ourselves leveraged by having critical supply chains in the United States. Number two, we got to make sure that we do have a prepared military. And there's been reports recently that have been kind of frightening about that, like the one factory that made munitions for a big part of the Army, like was offline for a long time because it blew up in Louisiana, and it was shocking, or how we're even having some challenges resupplying Ukraine. And so we have to make sure that capability is built up. And believe me, doing that is going to help to preserve peace rather than to start a war. I want to be very clear about that. But the other thing that we also need to do is that we shouldn't be looking to have a list of concessions that we want to give to Beijing.
Nope.
Like to take tariffs off or to stop sanctions or to do stuff like that, because there isn't a darn thing that Xi Jinping or the Chinese Communist Party has done to deserve it. I mean, there's continued, you know, they're building new coal-fired power plants. There's still a lot of industrial espionage. The human rights abuses go on. There's a lot of aggressive actions in the Asia-Pacific region. And while there's no evidence that they've directly armed Russia and provided that type of support, you know, they're right on the edge, Rick. And so it's not like we owe them anything, you know. And so I think that's my concern, is that we get, you know, Trump did this China phase one deal and with China to kind of stop the addition of new tariffs. And China didn't live up to those commitments in any way, not even the purchases they agreed to make. Obama, quite honestly, got sweet talked by China, and his own advisors agreed after the fact that they were too soft, yep, that they gave China too much of the benefit of the doubt. And we don't even want to talk about Bush, because that was.
Yeah, that, I mean, it's been all give, give, give. So this idea that we're gonna have more concessions.
Right.
What are you talking about, more concessions? It's time to start clawing back some of the generosity and some of the help to help bring them along. It's time to start undoing some of that. And that means bringing those jobs back that were lost over those decades. And I think this Buy American provision that's in the spending bills should be enforced. And I know you guys have started an action to get the Secretary Buttigieg and say, hey, look, you know, no more of these loopholes, no more of these waivers to the Buy American provision. Start enforcing this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's such an interesting history to this, Rick, because, you know, and we're not too dissimilar in ages, that for a long time, presidents have talked about Made in America and Buy American. All of them have talked about it. And Many of them have come up short because they'll talk about Made in America or Buy America, and then their policy will be pretty weak. Well, Reagan, you know, as part of a transportation bill, they put in Buy America in 1983. But here's the thing that we're talking about. Immediately waived the provision that required manufacturing products to be made in America for Department of Transportation. Now, iron and steel are, except for when they're waived, but manufactured products are not, because there's this general applicability waiver. And we told Secretary Buttigieg, look, if you really are doing this infrastructure bill, you got to get rid of this waiver that's been in effect since 1983. I mean, you know, that's 80s music. I'm happy to have a bit of that in my life from 1983, but not a damn waiver that's costing us jobs. We got to get rid of that. So there's a comment period that the Department of Transportation has open about this. And so we have basically about 3 weeks, a little less than 3 weeks, to make our voices heard. And believe me, I know, because we've been up there, that all the importers and the contractors that like to make a little more money by using super cheap imports, and even some of the states and localities, you know, don't favor lifting this waiver. And so it's got to be working people that stand up, because it's our jobs, you know, it's our factory jobs that could benefit from this greatly if we stop this outsourcing loophole for once and for all.
And if people go to AmericanManufacturing.org, it's right there on the front. Take action. It's time to end the offshoring loophole. Click on that. There'll be a way to add your name to that and a comment as well, right?
That's absolutely right. And it is critical that our voices be heard, because like I said, the big, you know, the Chamber of Commerce, the general contractors, all these anti-union folks, in addition to foreign countries and others that stand to make money by using imported outsourced products, are standing in the way of this. So we got to make sure our voices are heard, and get this thing restored to what it was supposed to be. Because that way, the Build America, Buy America will truly be that, and the infrastructure money that we see getting out there every day is going to be used. They're going to be using Made in America materials for that, rather than things coming from other countries with our tax dollars.
Yeah, and ultimately it comes down to what I talk about all the time. It's about the jobs. It's about the economy, stupid. It doesn't get any easier than this. In fact, I got this infograph from, you know, someone over at the Department of Energy that pointed out all of the EVs and all the battery plants that are popping up. And they said there's over $95 billion announced in funding. There's over 160 new and expanded mineral and mineral processing manufacturing facilities. They're saying there's enough to power 10 million EVs each year. And the important part, creating 70,000 new jobs while doing it in states all across the country. Sadly, mostly red, but red and blue states. It's bringing that capacity home. Who could be against that?
Yeah, well, unfortunately, politics get in the way of this stuff. And the argument that I get sick of, and you probably hear this too, is that if we're going to totally convert from the combustion engine to batteries, it's going to mean that we're going to be dependent on China, right? Because so much of the processing happens there. Leaving out the fact that, you know, a lot of our gas and oil comes from, you know, the Middle East or other places that have cost us geopolitically. And so the whole idea of this investment and these tax incentives are to make sure that we're bringing this battery production to the United States. And that's exactly what's happening. And so you see, this is a great example of how, if you have the right incentives, you're offsetting the cost of capital, if you're providing the right consumer incentives, that the private sector will respond. And so it is and I agree with you. I think that they're, you know, that corporate America needs to stand up and make sure that these are good jobs, and needs to make sure that workers should have a right to bargain, a right to a voice at work on this, and need to be held account for that. You know, the first step is making sure we have that work, and we're getting there, you know. But and the worst thing that could happen is for Republicans to want to repeal all of this because of an agenda, or to you know, scream if one of these smaller companies doesn't necessarily make it and go Solyndra, you know, all over again.
Yeah.
Forgetting the fact that the same money that financed Solyndra, you know, also financed Tesla, which became a you know, we can talk about their politics and they're horrendous, right, in a lot of ways, but there is no doubt that they became a massive EV success in part because of that energy department funding. And so there's a lesson there that we can do this. We can do this well, and we're going to create jobs of the future. And someone's going to be making these EVs. I mean, I want it to be us.
Absolutely.
I don't want it to become from China and BYD and NIO and all these other companies, and we're going to have no jobs as a result of that. I want them to be GMs and Fords and all of that good stuff that are made in the Midwest and other parts of the country.
And maybe even names that we don't even know yet, but they're, right. They're birthed and sprung right here at home. You listen to the Rick Smith Show here with Scott Paul. Scott's the president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing, AmericanManufacturing.org, the website. You're going to want to check that out. Take action to make sure that we're enforcing our Buy American provisions and we bring manufacturing home. Now, what's interesting is, you know, this is sadly a red hat, blue hat issue. And it's turned into that because, sadly, that's what's happened to us. We've picked teams, and if you're a red hat, you got to be against this. If you're a blue hat, you got to be all for it. I'm in the hard hat category. For me, this is about jobs. This is about the future of the country and supply chains that are reliable in times of crisis. All of this stuff. And this, for me, is I think about what FDR would do. I mean, you know, slap a flag on it and get patriotism behind this. Start waving. This is Americana at its greatest. This is for the capitalists saying this is our capitalist nation rising up, taking on the communist government. There should be a unifying point to this. How is it we're still ripped apart on this?
Yeah, it is. The national politics on this are crazy. And some of the state politics are crazy, too. But a lot of them aren't. I mean, it's why you see, and we can disagree with them on a bunch of different issues, but like, you know, Governor DeWine in Ohio, all aboard on the Intel and the solar stuff that's happening there and the EVs. Or, you know, even Marjorie Taylor Greene, as crazy and dangerous as she is, like there's a solar company locating in Georgia as a result of the Inflation Reduction Act, and sure enough, who shows up for the ribbon cutting and says she's all for it?
Of course. I know. Here's the thing, and this is, we should be celebrating companies that do the right thing. Yeah. I look at this, the Siemens company in Texas.
Yeah.
They're building EV chargers. They will be Buy American compliant. That is a good thing. You know, slap a flag on that. We slap flags on everything else and encourage that.
Yeah. Well, here's my hope, Rick, and this is what I hope happens, because we've seen this with some other things as well. You know, once those jobs get stood up and you have all these factories coming on board, and whether there's, you know, they're in semiconductors or batteries or electric vehicles or solar panels or any of those components, it's hard to roll back that stuff. Right. What are you going to do? Tell Intel to you know, take, you know, 5,500 jobs or something to some other country, or to tell Ford to move those jobs out of Kentucky to Mexico? I mean, it's just, it seems like it would be untenable down the road, but of course it's red meat for their base to be against anything that Biden's, you know, all about. So, but it's funny, when you get down to the local level, it's like, you know, they're like, well, I'm still against the Inflation Reduction Act, but I like the part that made this possible, right? and they start parsing it out.
Yeah.
And boy, there's a lot of there's a lot of pretzeling and twisting and all of this stuff. So tis the season, and look, those folks should be held to account too. They need to support this. They need to get on board. I completely agree with you. This is not red. This is not blue. This is American, and this is about our future. And this is about manufacturing jobs and about being at the vanguard of the industries of the future, rather than sitting on the sidelines and having everything slapped, you know, made in China coming in here. Because to me, that's completely unacceptable.
Lastly, I wanted to get your thoughts on the House Select Committee on China, led by Republican Mike Gallagher. Evidently, they've launched a bipartisan investigation into to U.S. businesses and what they've done with the Uyghurs and all of this forced labor stuff going on. Am I getting this right?
Yeah, that's totally right. And just, I mean, this may seem like an esoteric issue, but this is really about human rights and genocide, quite honestly, and how complicit companies are in all of this, taking advantage of what is literally slave labor in a part of China where they make a lot of auto parts, where they make a lot of polysilicon for solar panels, tomatoes, fabrics that go into textiles that are sold. And so it is a safe bet that every American probably has something that was produced by slave labor, you know, in the Uyghur region without even knowing about it. And so Chairman Gallagher, who's a Republican from Wisconsin, and his Democratic counterpart, Raja Krishnamoorthy from Illinois, are going to say to these companies, look, let's be honest here. What do you got there? And no equivocating, because these companies like to have it both ways, because they're afraid that the Chinese Communist Party, you know, will punish them in some way if they admit to some of this stuff. But no, our, you know, the stuff we're wearing and we depend on should not be made by slave labor in any part of the world. And it's shameful that you have major companies that are in all likelihood a big part of this.
Yeah, but you know, I got conservatives telling me all the time, I don't know why you're so, you know, up on the Uyghurs. You know, we use child labor all over the place. Look at your iPhone. You're complaining about child labor and human rights abuses on your iPhones. I don't have an iPhone, but yeah, you know, I've got a phone. But are they not wrong?
Yeah, look, it's a, you know, kind of like there's a situation where some things you don't have a choice, right? You know, and so we want to have a choice, but we want to make sure that things are responsibly made. I'm not against trade. I'm totally not against trade, but I am not for trade that exploits people, that utilizes slave labor, and that has the effect of shipping jobs overseas and also making lives of other people worse in places like that. So
there it is.
There should be some accounting for this, and my hope is that we'll get some answers here.
There you go. Scott, I appreciate the time, as always. I hope folks will check out the website, AmericanManufacturing.org. Take action. Get rid of the loophole to give waivers to the Buy American provision. Get your voice heard by May 22nd. Scott, appreciate the time.
Hey, Rick, great to be with you tonight, as always.
Thanks so much. Let's take a quick break. Right back with your thoughts. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1830. That was the birthday of Richard Trevelyan, one of the early leaders of the U.S. labor movement and the fight for the eight-hour workday. Of English descent, Richard was the son of a Cornish farmer. As a young man, Trevelyan took up the trade of a ship carpenter. Soon after, he traveled to Australia to seek his fortune and to prospect for gold. The horrible working conditions caused him to speak out for workers in Australia and New Zealand before arriving in the United States. First, he came to New Orleans, where he became involved in the trade union movement. When the Civil War broke out, he traveled north. In 1862, he settled in Detroit, working in the Detroit Dry Docks. Soon after, Richard became president of the Ship Carpenters and Caulkers International Union. He was well known as an eloquent speaker for the cause of labor. He founded the Detroit Trades Assembly. A short-lived organization, the assembly attempted to bring together skilled tradesmen to organize for improved working conditions and hours. His skills as an orator often put Trevelyan in high demand in the nearby city of Chicago. On the 4th of July celebration held by the Chicago Trades Assembly in 1965, Trevelyan called for the eight-hour workday. In his speeches, Trevelyan advocated that workers should not see a reduction of pay for working 8 hours. Instead, he argued that increased productivity of workers should allow their wages to stay steady. He was also a proponent of worker education. He argued that a well-read workforce could better articulate its demands. In 1869, he was elected president of the National Labor Union, an early attempt to join workers across the country under the banner of one organization. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So evidently Donald Trump went to Scotland. Said it's great to be home in Scotland. And my mind went, you know, keep him. Let him stay. You know, that's okay. We're okay. Good luck. Evidently visiting his golf course. Another interesting story coming out of Oregon. The Secretary of State, Sheema Fagan, has resigned today, less than a week after it came to light that she had taken some side consulting gigs, made a couple of bucks doing some consulting for the cannabis industry. You know, when right around the time her office was doing some auditing of the pot program. So it's come to light. There's a scandal and then the resignation. And my thought went, gee, if only everyone, you know, thought, you know, when their character, when their ethics are called into question, that, you know, you do the what used to be the normal thing. You go, okay, I screwed up. I'm going to go away. That's only on the left, because it got me thinking about Al Franken, who, you know, in the grand scheme of things, didn't do much. In fact, the woman that, you know, was a part of this said she didn't want him to resign, but he did anyway, because the calls from in the House were, you've got to go. On the other side, you got Clarence Thomas, who Ed Markey, senator from Massachusetts last week, said, hey, you know, you got to go. It's time to resign. Your reputation is unsalvageable. And he's not resigning. He's not going anywhere. There'll be no punishment. But what's interesting is watching the Republicans come out and defend him. You've got Mike Lee, who evidently has taken a whole bunch of money from Harlan Crow as well, saying, you know, Justice Thomas is one of the most influential jurists our country has ever known. This guy, Michael Mukasey, who was an attorney general during the George W. Bush years and a former judge, and Federalist Society member, mind you. He was being questioned by Georgia Senator Ossoff. And, you know, Ossoff asked him, you know, if someone, you know, offered to take you on a $500,000 vacation, he said, I'd assume you'd turn that down. And Mukasey's answer was, quote, if I were a district judge and somebody wanted to fly me on his private plane on a vacation with his family, I were friendly with that person, Would I have refused and endangered the friendship? He says, I'm not sure I would have. And you go, wait a second, you're saying that, you know, improprieties aside, the appearance of improprieties, because I gotta keep this friendship. And that's the reason you would do it? So what would happen if there was a case in front of you that, or a case in front of you of a friend of a friend of a friend's, because you're all in the same social circles, would you then fear endangering the relationship of all of your friends? Because understand how the Supreme Court really masterfully has been manipulated. You look at this Federalist Society, who for years has been grooming judges to put on the bench to get them the ideological space to do their bidding. Conservatives, understand, they understood the judiciary's power. They invested heavily in it. You look at this Leonard Leo, who got $1.6 billion. Just a gift, you know, and what's it going to be for? It's going to be for packing the courts for crazy right-wing ideological purposes. I had someone go, well, do you think Harlan Crow was buying Clarence Thomas's vote? No, he wasn't buying it. He was keeping him in the lap of luxury to keep him in the circle of friends. Imagine, if you will, if someone says, hey, you know, I'll give you, you know, $20,000, $50,000 to do this thing. And you know that's bribery, right? You're not going to do that. But if you say, hey, you remember all those people who got you where you're supposed to be? All the people who invested in you to help get you to the, you know, through the courts and through all this stuff. And we chose you, remember? You want to be part of the circle, don't you? Well, you're going to have to play ball. And what's interesting is he says that he wouldn't turn it down. And I'm like, okay, well, I guess you never know. Someday you might need someone to buy your mother's house. Someday, you know, mom's house may need some work done on it. I get it. There's a rich guy who's going to step in and help you out. I get it. You're admitting the whole thing is corrupt. You're admitting the whole incestuous pool of legal doctrine now that conservatives have been pitching for decades is all just a, well, just a ripoff, just a scam. And our six dictators in robes all have been very well groomed. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Miss any portion.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha,